with Western man, there's no going back behind Christ. It's either Christ or it's nothing at all. If it's nothing at all, then he ceases to have any culture or any civilization, properly speaking. His civilization comes to an end.
Dr. Anthony Eslin, author of the best-selling book Out of the Ashes, talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
But for Western man to know Christ and then to turn away from him, to have his whole civilization built upon the Christian faith and then to turn away from that, is suicide.
You can meet and hear Dr. Anthony Eslin making the case for Western civilization at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Attendance is limited to 400. Child care is free. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. News continues to break on the front of the priestly abuse scandal in the Roman Catholic Church. The Pope has very recently said that he will meet with U.S. bishops to talk about the issue. This is the Pope who has said in the last several weeks that he would not have a word to say about it. And recently in a sermon during Mass talked about those who are bringing these allegations as great accusers who are trying to scandalize the church before the world. Well, what do we do with it? How do we understand something that stretches across the globe, across decades, and is, well, enough to bring the Pope to the United States if that's what he needs to do to talk about it? The priestly abuse scandal, is it simply about the abuse of power? Or we say sexual abuse, is there something sexual about it? How do we understand the Pope's silence? And, well, how do we understand the role of homosexuality in the clergy, almost from top to bottom, in the Roman Catholic Church? Dr. Anthony Eslin joins us to talk about the clergy sexual abuse crisis in the Roman Catholic Church. He's teaching fellow and writer-in-residence at the Thomas More College of the Liberal Arts in Merrimack, New Hampshire, and he's author of several books, including Out of the Ashes and a recent column for Crisis Magazine titled What the Priest Scandal Is and Is Not About. Dr. Eslin, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. It's great to be back here.
Just this morning, it was announced that Pope Francis is summoning senior bishops for a first-of-its-kind meeting early next year to discuss the prevention of abuse by Roman Catholic clerics and the protection of children. It's supposed to be held in the third week of February. And Rod Dreher, a mutual acquaintance, saw this posted this morning, and he tweeted this in reaction. He said, Vatican's strategy is a scam to misdirect attention from adult sexual corruption among priests, especially homosexuality. Don't fall for it. That's Rod Dreher. What are your thoughts there?
My first thought is that I agree with Rod. My second thought is I would really like to see what the Italian was that the Pope used. If the word is bambini, we got the big problem. If the Italian word is ragazzi, that covers older kids, and if it's giovani, it can cover young men too. So there might just possibly be a translation glitch here. However, it's certainly true that especially the left in the Catholic Church, want to distract attention from the homosexuality of four-fifths and more of the abuse and of all of the clerical networking. I wrote recently, we did not have here a network of womanizing priests promoting each other, cuddling with each other in one way or another, right? That crime was entirely homosexual. Okay, and the bishops are compromised. The bishops are they're part of it. A lot of the people who would be part of this conference are probably themselves compromised. So I mean, how are they going to reform themselves when they need some cleaning up on their own to do of themselves? It is a complete mess, and a lot of people don't want to look at all of the features of the mess. One of the features, as I've written, is that in fact, much of this stuff was, to one degree or another, consensual. That's a big problem, too. And it doesn't make it better. In many ways, it makes it worse. It's a different kind of evil. When you have enticed a young person into evil, then you've co-opted their will in part. You make it the harder for them to resist or to repent, even to excuse themselves. It's almost the worst thing. In some ways, it's worse. It may be worse for the victim to be inveigled or enticed than to be overcome by sheer force. I don't know. In the case of boys, I don't know. But it's certainly a different kind of evil and not to be discounted.
A little more than a week ago, you wrote a piece for Crisis Magazine on what the Priestley scandal is and is not about. And you concluded it this way, and I'd like you to explain. You say the church is our mother and no true son or daughter takes delight in the shame of his mother. We also must not do so. Why did you conclude that way, Dr. Esselin?
In the great long history of the church, I'm speaking now as a Roman Catholic, but I think it applies to the churches individually and generally speaking. There's never been a time when there has not been a crisis. You know, maybe the Silver Age of the church existed once, the Golden Age never. There's always been trouble, right? There was trouble on Calvary. The question is, what do you do? What do you do as the individual believer? Do you shake your head, as some do, and say, well, I guess that was all a pipe dream anyway, and then you go back to your typical, ordinary, sinful ways? Or do you say, no, No. Even if there were 11 Judases and only one, John, I am not going to go with the Judases. I'm not going to just walk away. I'm going to be faithful to that man up there on the cross, right? And I have to believe as a non-independent Christian believer, as a believer that, in fact, Christ established church, not just individual believers here, there, and everywhere, I have to remain faithful to the church, that church that I see as the church. I have no other choice. At least this is as I see it now. For instance, if the Roman Catholic Church started ordaining women, then I would have a big problem. That would involve truth there, not just the sins of men, but truth. But I don't believe that that can happen, but I'm just a hypothetical. If it did, then I got an issue. But the fact that there are wicked men in the highest enclaves of the church or the churches or any that can't surprise anybody. And it doesn't surprise me. It dismays me. I'm disgusted by it, but I'm not surprised by it.
I have a distant cousin who is a lifelong practicing Catholic, and he recently tweeted something. The Pope held a mass yesterday and spoke of these accusations as kind of the great accuser, trying to expose the sins of the church in order to bring scandal. Many reacted strongly against the Pope's words there. But my cousin said, you know, I've said many good things about this Pope, but I'm done with him now. Do you think that that's a pretty common response among the pew-sitting Roman Catholics you know?
It probably is. I don't poll them on it. I've adopted a policy, and I may be incorrect about this. I may be wrong about it. I'm not sure of myself here, but my policy is that the Pope is my father, and I don't go out of my way to say bad things about my father. And in his case, I don't say anything at all. I've written very little about Pope Francis, almost nothing. I wouldn't want to elaborate more on that. I can't say I'm done with the Pope. I don't speak publicly or write publicly about the specifics of this Pope. So I guess I could not say that I'm done with him because I've never engaged him in the first place. If he says something beautiful or brilliant or wonderful, I will be happy and I will repeat it and speak about it. there has been very little for me to repeat or speak about, if that's fair. I'm not sure that I'm right in this. I'm not sure of myself. My conscience is not clear here. I don't have any clear direction. A good friend of mine has, the one whom I work with too, has written very clearly and bluntly about the Pope and the papacy, and has called for the Pope to resign. I haven't.
Let's return to the issue of the homosexual angle here. Why do both, apparently, the hierarchy of the church, not to a man, but many of them, and the media covering this, why do both of them seem to want to avoid that quite obvious fact here, these networks of powerful homosexual clergy?
For the same reason why they want to ignore everything else regarding homosexuality. The homosexuals have established the beachhead. They give cover to all the rest of us people who want to do something sexual that is outside of the moral law. If the homosexuals can do what they do, then everything that ordinary heterosexual people do is covered. If that's okay, then your kid who is shacking up with his girlfriend, I mean, we're not going to say anything about that, because that at least is according to the natural order, you see. And if that's okay over there, we're certainly not going to talk about divorce and remarriage, right? I mean, everything else falls short of that, so everybody has an interest in letting homosexuals have that beachhead. Yet it involves all kinds of willed ignorance, right? I mean, every single male, I'm persuaded of this, every male human being over the age of 20, just by being a male, just by being a guy, already knows a heck of a lot more about what male homosexuals do than women do, or than it will ever be admitted in public, in newspapers and whatnot. It's not going to be admitted. But we know, all right? One of the things we know is that homosexual men are attracted to boys. I mean, that is just a plain fact. It's attested across cultures. It's attested in ours. All you have to do is scratch the surface a little bit, and this whole wing of the homosexual life here in the United States that not only involves attraction to boys, but action upon the attraction, sometimes barely within the limits of the statutory law, sometimes not. I'm not saying that all homosexuals act upon this attraction, but it's there. And as soon as your vulnerable kid passes the statutory age of consent, all bets are off, okay? And, nobody wants to talk about this. Nobody wants to talk about what happens when you've got a vulnerable 18- or 19-year-old kid in an all-male environment that is pro-homosexual, that has homosexuals in power in it, right? And people want to focus on the fact, well, you know, there's this difference in power, and that's the problem. No, you know, in any organization, you're going to have differences in power. The problem here is that you've got men who are attracted to boys and young men in that particular environment where they have plenty of boys and young men to go after, and nobody wants to talk about it, because nobody wants to examine the actual moral problems or, frankly, the actual trauma and suffering that the homosexual person himself has undergone as a child. Nobody wants to go there. You lift up that carpet and you're going to see a lot of termites and creepy things, and a lot of people are involved in the guilt and the misery of it, not just the homosexuals. Nobody wants to lift up the carpet.
Dr. Anthony Esalen is our guest. We're talking about the clergy sexual abuse crisis in the Roman Catholic Church. When we come back, is it as some say that priests become priests so they can act as predators? We'll be right back.
No one wants his or her life to end meaninglessly, and that is certainly what happens if there is no life after death or final judgment.
International human rights attorney Dr. John Warwick Montgomery talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Religions other than Christianity provide no assurance in this regard. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is at the very heart of Christianity, and is the most compelling reason to believe the claims of Christ to be God come to earth for the salvation of mankind. The evidence for the resurrection is so powerful that it would stand up in any court of law.
You can meet and hear Dr. John Warwick Montgomery making a legal case for the resurrection of Christ at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you know a high school student who would make a great pastor, teacher, deaconess, director of parish music, or director of Christian education? Tell them about Careers for Christ Weekend, Friday, October 12th through Sunday, October 14th at Concordia University, Chicago. This even includes a group outing to downtown Chicago. Check it out at cuchicago.edu/c4c. That's cuchicago.edu/c4c.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the clergy sexual abuse crisis in the Roman Catholic Church with Dr. Anthony Esselin, author of several books, including Out of the Ashes, and a recent column of Crisis Magazine titled What the Priest Scandal Is and Is Not About. Given what you said before the break, Dr. Esselin, I'm wondering, and I think you addressed this in your Crisis article, some say that priests became priests so that they could act as predators, but you say if only it were that simple. What do you mean by that?
I mean that I know too much from the observation of people, from the, you know, thinking about the contradictions in my own heart. I've read too much literature, which gives you the distilled experience of thousands of years of human beings looking at other human beings. And it's just, there's too much of it there to allow me to draw any obvious conclusions in this case. Human heart is a tangle of contradictions. François Mauriac, one of my favorite writers from the 20th century, a French Catholic novelist, called a human heart a viper's tangle, a knot of vipers. Well, it's more than that, but it is that. He says both that it's more than that and other than that, but it also is that, too. I mean, it would be so wonderfully easy to say, yeah, you know, what you had here is a bunch of practical atheists who entered the priesthood because it would give them easy access to young men. That's very comforting for a person who doesn't suffer that temptation to hear. That makes everything all nice and clear, right? I mean, I don't suffer that temptation, so, you know, I don't have anything to worry about there. It's not that clear. Unfortunately or fortunately, there might have been in this particular human soul. I'm thinking about the Cardinal of Washington, D.C., McCarrick. There may have been a belief in God. There may have been wishful hoping. that, you know, if only I devote my life to God, then this temptation will go away. There may have been another kind of wishful hoping. You know, the church does condemn this temptation, but maybe in the near future it'll moderate its condemnation, or another kind of wishful hoping. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to sin, but God will forgive me anyway if I sin, and I'm going to try a little bit not to sin, but if I do fall, I got him in my hip pocket. Just the great array of subterfuges, dodges, evasions, self-deceptions, rationalizations, you know, all the kinds of things, the phony arguments, the fallacies that we use and we all use to justify whatever it is that we're doing that is wrong, that we wish were not wrong. And this is the case with all human beings, not just with people who fall to sexual sin. That's why I think it's to look at what has happened to that man is terrifying if you look at it correctly. Look at it incorrectly is to say, well, my gosh, what awful things he did. I sure don't do those awful things. Isn't that terrible? He never should have been a priest. Well, you know, all that may be true. You don't do those awful things, right? You happen not to be tempted to do those awful things. You're tempted to do other awful things. Maybe he should never have become a priest. But the priesthood isn't limited to saints. I mean, who are you going to get? Everybody's a sinner, and everybody is in dire need of the grace of God. I don't know what he believed when he entered the priesthood. I don't know what he believes now. But once you start asking questions like that, the real person that you've got to look at is not your neighbor, but yourself. My gosh, then, what about my faith? What about that? That's a more difficult question to ask, and when you've got a scandal around, it's the easiest thing in the world to do is to say, oh my gosh, all these horrible, horrible people out there. Well, you know, there is this invention called a mirror if you want to find another horrible person. I hate to put it this way, but there is that mirror.
How do you understand or explain the responses of some bishops, certainly not all, but some bishops, that you have characterized as callous and petty, condescending responses to this crisis? How do you explain that?
I think the most obvious conclusion, and I'm not speaking of any particular person here, okay? I mean, again, I'm speaking in general terms. Generally speaking, then, I think it can be explained the way you would explain it if it were other human beings and another sin that we were talking about. The people in question are themselves compromised by that sin. And I'm not applying that to any particular person, because I don't know the particular person. But as a general statement, I think it would hold. If you have a big group of people over there, fairly large group of people, and we've got a very serious sin that members of their own group or of a group that is attached to theirs have committed, and your response to that is strangely not to the point. You don't seem to get what the seriousness is, and you seem to want to turn the conversation to anything else but that, then I think it's a fair assumption to say that somehow a critical number of the people in that group are themselves compromised by the sin. Not saying that they're guilty of the sin, but they're compromised by it. That is, they've known it goes on. They know people who have sinned that way. They have looked the other way. They've done nothing about it. They have temporized. They've cut corners. They've been trimmers. And the last thing that they want is any severe focus upon the particular sin, because what they've done, and more to the point, what they have failed to do, will come to the light. They're made nervous about it. If you've been cutting corners with the tax law, right, and you've made a kind of a career, not necessarily violating it openly, but cutting corners here, there, cutting corners. The last thing you want are reformers in that line. And if there is a big scandal, then even if you are not guilty of the worst crimes in that scandal, even if you are hardly guilty at all of any crimes in that scandal, but you've covered for others, you're going to want to change the conversation. you're going to want to direct it towards abuse of power, for instance, or whatever it is. Whatever it is. I have the picture of one such bishop in my mind, and I'm trying to block that picture out because I don't want to judge an individual. I don't know individuals. I can't say with any specificity what this person did or what that person did. But I think as a general rule, it holds because of human nature, and probably holds here too.
Before we let you go, Dr. Esselin, if you would, give us a brief preview of your upcoming presentation, Making the Case for Western Civilization, at the Fall 2018 Issues, Etc., Making the Case Conference in Dallas.
Well, I think I'm going to take my lead from what a friend of mine, David Hart, wrote in an article for First Things, I think it's about 20 years ago now, or almost, Christ or Nothing. Western man can't go back to the old paganism, and he can't become Eastern man. That's not advisable. I don't think the Eastern philosophies and the Eastern religions have grasp on the truth, a full grasp on the truth. They may have some. With a Western man, there's no going back behind Christ. It's either Christ or it's nothing at all. If it's nothing at all, then he ceases to have any culture or any civilization, properly speaking. His civilization comes to an end. You know, his buildings stay up, and you know, his roads, they still drive on them. Television, there still is all that stuff, but as a real living force, creative of great works of art, of great cultural institutions, it comes to an end. It's coming to an end in Europe, if it's not already at an end. So, in that sense, it's if we want the civilization to survive, and I don't see why we should not, because there is no alternative. I mean, really, do people in the United States want to live as Japanese live with that civilization? They want that. If they want what they've come to take for granted, then they'd better come back to Christ. Because if they don't, they will lose all of that. They'll lose it. There's no foundation for it. There's no cultural foundation for it. It'll go. And it's going in Europe. It's shriveling up and vanishing before our eyes. And secular commitments to free markets and freedom of speech, you know, they won't survive. They won't survive either. Without a religious basis, the civilization will die. The only religious basis that this civilization can have is Christ. Now, that's not an argument for the truth of Christianity. Other arguments are arguments for the truth of Christianity. But for Western man to know Christ and then to turn away from him, to have his whole civilization built upon the Christian faith, and then to turn away from that is suicide. That's what it is, plain and simple. Even in earthly terms, it's suicide. Forgetting about the life to come, it's suicide.
You can meet and hear Dr. Anthony Esselin as he makes the case for Western civilization and learn more about the Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org. The conference is Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas. Dr. Anthony Esselin is teaching fellow and writer in residence at Thomas More College of the Liberal Arts in Merrimack, New Hampshire. He's author of several books, including Out of the Ashes and a recent column for Crisis Magazine titled What the Priest Scandal Is and Is Not About. Read it for yourself at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Esselin, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd. It's great to be here.
Joy Pullman will be with us on the other side of the break, managing editor of The Federalist. She has recently written there of Journals University's Deep Sixing, a study for noticing men and women are different. We'll talk about it after this.
It's difficult for others to know how to be a part of another person's grief in a tragic event such as a miscarriage.
Deaconess Catherine Ziegler Weber, editor of the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for September, Never Forsaken, God's Mercy in the Midst of Miscarriage.
But as Christians, we have a more significant death that unifies us, and that's what we have to cling to, is the cross.
Learn more about Never Forsaken at issuesetc.org.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
Concordia Seminary St. Louis is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During September, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Concordia Seminary. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church, LutheranFCU.org.